Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, June 29th, 2010. Tech News Today is brought to you by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. To find an in-store demo at a Best Buy near you, visit slingbox.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Becky Worley.
Behind the board is our stupendous producer, Eric Lanigan. Hi, Eric.
Hey, guys. How are you?
How is it going?
It's going well.
Thank you for telling us. This is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day. Try to make a little bit of sense out of it. Big news breaking this morning. Hulu has unveiled a subscription service. This is the long anticipated and rumored subscription service. But let's break down the details of it first, and then we could kick around whether we think this is something we'd pay for or not. It's going to be $9.99 a month. And for that $10 a month, you will get access to older shows in the season. So, for instance, let's say 30 Rock is up and the past five episodes are there in the free version. If you pay the $10, you get all the episodes from the season. They also have full runs of older shows like The X-Files and movies and things like that. They're going to make it available on non-web devices. There's going to be an iPhone app, an iPad app. It's going to be available on the Xbox 360 and the PS3. So this is something that will expand the availability of Hulu. It's actually going to show up on some TVs as well, so you can just watch it in your living room, watch Hulu. And it's still going to have ads, even if you pay for it.
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like Hulu's marketing this as a cable killer. They've had some people speaking to the folks at All Things D saying, you know, we don't expect this to help people to just completely stop paying that $89 a month that's the average cable bill. Because they're not offering everything. They have about, I think, 2,000 episodes available, 120 seasons of shows. So the question, are they just doing a little marketing dance, or is this really something you could use to stop paying $90 a month?
Yes, you're right. They don't have CBS or Viacom, which we've talked about the rumors that they've been entertaining the idea of including them. This is still just ABC, NBC, and Fox. And they all own a piece of it. NBC and Fox particularly own a big piece of it. There's lots of other people that own pieces of Hulu. And the advertising money has kept them profitable. Hulu has been profitable, but it's not enough to make any one stakeholder rich. And they all want to be rich. So they're trying to find other ways to make money off of this. And they're also, I think the other element here is they've been trying to figure out how they can justify expanding into things like the Xbox. So the PS3 is going to get it in July. Xbox 360, you'll get it after the holidays. And the subscription model allows them to say, okay, well, even if this does eat into other syndication deals or DVD rentals or this or that, we can still make some money. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got some mic craziness from you there.
Me?
Yeah. Did your mic fall off?
It's down in the valley.
He's got to secure that thing.
It's still there. I'll try not to move.
Okay.
It sounds okay now.
Yeah, it's fine now.
Okay. Nothing happened. It did not fall in the valley. There were no meat sellers at the door. Let us continue the TNT.
Anyway, so the point here is they're trying to find ways to expand internet availability of their shows without cannibalizing any of their existing deals.
Sidebar. A friend asked me today about buying a TV. I'm sure every one of us who's listening, who's sort of an early adopter, gets these questions all the time. And for the first time, thinking about this story and some of the other innovations, I said, you know, you might want to look for a TV that really has that Ethernet plug in it so that you can hook it straight up to your cable modem or what have you. Do you think that we're ready for that advice for the mainstream, future-proofing your TV?
I think at this point, yes, I think it's a good thing to tell people because of Netflix and because now the Samsung internet-connected TVs and Blu-ray players have Hulu Plus applications on them as of today, and they're going to expand onto other devices and TVs as well. I think it's good to say, you know what, you want to have that Ethernet cable, you want to have that ability to use these apps, but if somebody says, well, I don't want to pay the extra, then you're fine.
Because it's just that one, if you're going to try and make it last maybe a little longer, you can always buy some sort of cable box or Roku box, whatever. But if you want it all built in, it's just a teeny thing that might be worth it as the differential on prices for the ones with or without the Ethernet jack.
$10 a month for watching ads on older shows from this season. Not compelling for me. It's not something that's making me say, I have to sign up for this. Maybe the portability of being able to watch Hulu on, you know, on an iPad, or the convenience of being able to fire it up on my PS3 come July. No, that's starting to be a little more compelling. But, you know, Netflix, the cheapest plan is, I think, something like $8.99 a month. And I get a lot more content and no ads there. So I'm not getting everything at any place. If I'm going to choose, I'm going to choose Netflix still.
Yeah.
On to Google, which is in danger of losing its license to run a website in China because of their redirecting of google.com.cn to google.com.hk, which was their way around getting kicked off of the internet without continuing to do Chinese censorship for them.
This is kind of complicated, isn't it? It's a little bit of a chess game, and this recent move is... Explain the recent move, and then I'll back us in with a little bit of a timeline of how we got there.
So what we've got as of today, since China said we're not going to renew your license if you continue to redirect to Google Hong Kong, as of today, Google changed the page so it looks like a regular Google page when you go to the Chinese version of Google, and it has a text box and the Google buttons and a big link that says google.com.hk, which is Google Hong Kong. If you click anywhere on that page, it takes you to Google Hong Kong. It actually takes you to a special page of Google Hong Kong that has a couple of custom searches that actually go back to the Chinese version of Google, but for regular searches run through Hong Kong. So it's a risky move to say, okay, we won't redirect the domain to Google Hong Kong, but we're still going to have a big link, and that's the only way you're going to be searching. I don't know, and most other people don't think that China's going to go for that.
It's definitely Google saying, okay, China, your move yet again. So let's just go through this. They launch in China 2005. In 2006, they start censoring the political results through Google CN. In 2009, YouTube's banned in China. 2010, Google says, we're not going to censor political results. And that's when they make this move in March to redirect to Google HK. Now, the interesting thing about this move is that most searches done through Google's China language site are actually done through another site called Sina.com/CN that uses Google search. And I just went there today. They're still directly redirecting to the HK results. There's not a huge differential there. They're still doing the workaround to go to the HK sites where they're not censored.
Now, Sergey Brin was talking at the TED conference back in February, and what did he say that was sort of interesting?
Well, I think that what his comments belied to me when I listened to the whole 10 minutes of it in this particular chunk is what a cat and mouse game this is, and that this is all process, that he accepts that it's going to be move after move, and eventually he thinks it's going to make things better for the Chinese people. Take a listen and see what you think.
I know there was a lot of controversy surrounding that, and we had to self-censor a fair amount. But we were actually able to censor less and less, and our local competitors there also censor less and less. We, from the outside, provided notification when the local laws prevented us from showing information, and the local competitors followed suit in that respect. So I feel like our entry made a big difference. But things started going downhill, especially after the Olympics.
Yes, they definitely started going downhill.
And the competitor he's talking about is Baidu, right?
Baidu is the top search engine in China, doing so well, in fact, that they're actually in Silicon Valley now searching around for people to hire.
Yeah, they have 64% of the market share right now. And previously this year, they said, we want to go to 79%. Now, that's a huge jump unless Google loses their ability to actually have a site in China. So it's just, I think the bottom line is, I think Google is, my personal opinion is, Google is trying to do the right thing. But it's just such a dance. And I think they recognize this is just a story that's going to go on and on and on.
And all of this is good for Baidu, because they are doing the censorship as they are asked, and they have a huge percentage. And Google has got, you know, at a disadvantage, because you're not using a real site. It's this weird redirect to Hong Kong, and they might get kicked out. So let's move on to Dell and their issues with several huge companies over leaky capacitors. This kind of set this up for us, Becky. What's going on here? A leaky capacitor is a really bad and dangerous thing, and Dell has not handled this very well.
Well, basically what's happening is that they had components produced by an Asian PC supplier. And the allegations made by the New York Times today is that Dell sold over 11 million computers that had these faulty components from 2003 to 2005. And despite tons and tons of complaints, that there were no efforts on Dell's part to self-regulate and deal with this themselves. Now, these are primarily business computers. They're called the Optiplex models, small businesses, major businesses. And I'm just going to quote this from the Wall Street Journal, from the New York Times, because very rarely are they both geeky and funny at the same time. Capacitors are found on computer motherboards, playing a crucial role in the flow of current across the hardware. They are not meant to pop and leak fluid. Oh, really?
No, they are not. One of the ways you can tell a bad capacitor is when it starts to swell. I had a capacitor go bad on a TV motherboard once, and I popped it open and replaced the capacitor. And that was, you know, in my research, the instructions were, look for the capacitor that's swollen. You want to get that one out of there right away, because, you know, the more it swells, the more likely it is to burst, and you're in really bad shape if that happens. Well, what Dell was doing is these capacitors were going bad, and they were replacing them with motherboards that also had bad capacitors, and they knew it. At least that's what the court case alleges.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at their stock. They took a little bit of a hit this morning, but, you know, this is a little bit like a lot of the companies who, you know, the Toyota situation, the recalls. This is a black eye for Dell, and I think that how this proceeds will be interesting in terms of their you know, are you going to buy a Dell, dude, or are they jacked?
Dude, you're getting a leaky Dell. At one point, 1,000 computers that Dell delivered to the law firm that was defending it in the suit started to failing. This is according to Ars Technica. And Dell balked at fixing them for the law firm that was defending them in the suit. You think you'd at least take care of them.
Don't mess with your lawyer. That's a bad idea, Dell.
Yeah. This is just a lesson in the opposite of what Dell has been taught in Harvard Business School, as an example of how to build a business, because of the way they took over a huge section of the computer market from out of nowhere. This is an example of when your company gets too big, how covering your ass ends up becoming the business model and gets in the way of actually conducting a good business. This is, like you said, it's a huge black eye for Dell. Let's take a quick break before we move on. Today's show is brought to you by Slingbox. You've heard us talk about Slingbox on Tech News Today before. They let you watch your home TV anywhere you go. So you buy a Slingbox, you plug it in at home. And some people have been a little confused about this. They're like, well, wait a minute, what do I plug it into? Well, you plug an Ethernet cable into the Slingbox so that it's connected to the internet, and you plug the cable that's either coming out of your satellite or your cable television or even your over-the-air into the back of the Slingbox, and then you connect that Slingbox to the TV. So the signal goes through the Slingbox onto the TV. When you're watching at home, everything's normal, but when you're actually off with your iPad or your iPhone or your BlackBerry or your computer, you can access the Slingbox over the internet and intercept that signal and broadcast it back to yourself. So you don't have any subscription fees, any super technical knowledge, anything like that. All you got to do is log in on the app that you download. So if you want to try it out, why don't you go to slingbox.com find a Best Buy near you that's got an in-store demo and give it a shot. It'll give you access to everything you record off your DVR, anything you've got coming in over the air or on your cable box, anything you subscribe to. It's all available on the go. It's great for when you're traveling. I use it a lot to be able to watch stuff. Like when you go to Hawaii, Becky?
Yeah.
You can watch stuff early because, you know, your sling box is back here in California, so it's 3 hours ahead. You don't have to wait around. And then you're free to go to the beach and drink Mai Tais in the evening.
So yeah, I could watch my Good Morning America at 5 in the morning right when I wake up.
Right, exactly. All right. Former Facebook CTO is confirming something that Kevin Rose said on This Week in Tech, right?
Yeah, Kevin leaked a big rumor. Can we hear it from the source?
Yeah, let's take a little trip back in time to Kevin on Twit.
So, yeah, basically the rumor was that Google is launching a Facebook competitor soon.
Yes. I'm so happy.
And then it's going to be called...
Not our quit.
It's going to be called Google Me.
Google Me.
And
I've
heard it's pretty awesome.
Really?
Is what the rumor is. And this is a very credible source, so... We'll see. Facebook competitor.
Mm. Now, Kevin then removed his tweet about that later on. However, Adam D'Angelo, who was Facebook's CTO for years and is now founder of the Q&A service Quora, is weighing in with more details. He says it's not a rumor. It's a real project. A bunch of people are working on it. Google is committed to this. They realized Buzz was not enough to take on Facebook. They thought Facebook was going to fade out. It hasn't. And they are going to go up directly against Facebook with a Facebook competitor.
Another little facet of the mystery that's unraveling. So a guy named Rick Clow, who was the developer who built Buzz and was originally from a blogger section of Google, has now been tapped to overhaul Google Profiles. So from Buzz to Profiles, and you could see Google Profiles morphing into a fairly smooth transition to be that Facebook competitor. The question, does Facebook just have too much momentum? What do you think?
I don't think Google can easily take down Facebook, especially given how Buzz was rolled out and the mistakes that were made with Buzz. As far as, you know, you can argue whether there were real mistakes made or not, but there were plenty of people who thought Buzz was awful at the beginning, and it's smoothed out now, but they have learned a lot from that, but they've also burnt a lot of bridges with people who are going to be a little shy of jumping in on something new from Google where they have to give private information. They're already shy about giving Facebook private information. So it's going to be a uphill climb to convince people that they should jump from Facebook, which they barely trust, to something brand new from Google, which has this Buzz history.
See, I disagree with you. I think they do have an uphill battle, but I don't think that it has to do with that issue. I think that perception of Google and the Buzz problem affects maybe top 5% of early adopters and tech enthusiasts. But when it comes to the mass public, I think it's just going to be an export problem. It's not like Facebook's going to put an export button on your profile and have you just choose Google Me as an obvious, you know, location for it to land. People just don't want to start over.
Yeah, I think that is also true, which is all my friends are on Facebook. I am going to stay on Facebook. I mean, that was why people stayed with MySpace as long as they did. Their friends were on MySpace. But then as soon as people started to jump to Facebook, then we started to see Facebook explode. So the key question for any potential Google Me type situation is, how do we get people there? And the way they got people onto Buzz was to make their Gmail address their Buzz. And that was not a good idea. So, you know, they have to kind of balance this and figure out how to encourage people to come in without crossing that line of abusing the position they have. Because almost everybody's got some sort of Google usage behavior. So they do have an advantage there. 70% of people use it as a search engine, if nothing else. And there's tons of people on Gmail and Google Docs and all that kind of stuff.
Seems to me the only company that could actually challenge Facebook. And on Facebook today, I have to tell you, I got a couple of pings, people asking me about the iPhone and Verizon.
Oh, so this is one of your crypto phonology sites that, you know, it's like Sasquatch hunters and people who believe that Elvis is still alive. They believe that we will get a Verizon iPhone.
It seems that the rumor will not die, and new fodder coming today from a Bloomberg report that cites two unnamed sources that Verizon is getting the iPhone in January of 2011. What does the rumor count on this, Tom?
I don't think we have numbers large enough
to
accommodate the number of iPhone rumors. Well, but this one is definitely, it's going to come after the first of the year. It's going to happen. The fact is Apple's going to dramatically increase the number of, this is from a template. And this one might be, let me just say, this one might be true. This might be the one that is absolutely true. But they're all exactly the same. It's going to happen some 6 months from when we're dropping this rumor, and Apple's going to make bank off of this.
Conspiracy theory floating around. Verizon leaks this. It's not true. Somebody says, you know what? The best way to stop the bleeding to AT&T after they sold 1.7 million iPhone 4s this weekend is to start this rumor all up again. So just leak it.
It's cynical, but totally plausible. To just think you're scrunching again.
Becky, watch the hair.
I think it's
hitting
your microphone.
Your hair.
Yeah.
Whoa. Okay, I won't scrunch anymore, guys. Okay, I'm gonna redirect.
But it's totally cynical and totally true that it could work that way. They might because one of these pops up every time there's a new iPhone advance. Every time there's big news about the iPhone and AT&T. So let's talk about something that's not a rumor, but also still a little bit vaporous. Cisco making a tablet that is meant for business and meant for video conferencing called, what is it? CIUS? How do you pronounce that?
CIUS.
Oh, like see us, because it's meant for video conferencing.
Yeah, so this I'm actually kind of excited about this, because what I like about it, front and rear facing camera, the front camera is 720p HD, the rear camera 5 megapixel, dual noise canceling microphones, Wi-Fi 3G, obviously. And here's the deal. This is aimed squarely to be a mobile, small, easy-to-use, tablet-based version of the Cisco Telepresence, which I think has been pretty popular for business. And I just think this is a cool idea and a great use of the Android platform.
It will sell for less than $1,000, have HD output, I think 720p is what I read somewhere, Wi-Fi and 3G connectivity with an optional dock with a speakerphone, front-facing and rear-facing camera, like you said. So this is meant for people who want to do video conferencing on the go. And that's what Cisco's big thing is. They've got those huge teleconferencing systems. You see them advertised on TV where you can go into a room and be as if you're in the same room practically because of the huge screens. But that doesn't help you when you're at the airport lounge. Well, that's where CS would fill in, presumably. 7 inches, though, it seems a little small.
I just think that if you're talking about a one-to-one, like if this is just a tablet for one employee who's going to do a lot of teleconferencing as opposed to telepresence, which is multi-employee use, I think it has to be really, the cost has to be kept down. So I'm sure that's a part of the screen decision. And, you know, actually, I was just before our podcast, I was doing a Skype with the folks from Skype. And we were talking about how Skype has been integrated into broadcast use so much. And we were talking about the new CS, and they said, you know, we just are realizing that, you know, this is a huge market for us. We have this great opportunity to go forth and reach out to business and broadcast. And it's like, yeah, how come you didn't do anything about this earlier?
We should have thought of that.
Well, they do have their SDK coming out, which will allow for the integration of Skype into hardware, apps, software. So, you know, I'm on a Canon camera here, but I wouldn't be surprised if you see me on a Sony with Wi-Fi enabled camera, and it's got Skype built right into it.
But this isn't going to take on the iPad. These are two different businesses, right? The iPad is meant for home use, for consumer use, for entertainment, maybe light productivity. The CS is like, put it in your briefcase and take it with you, road warrior. Hit the road and do some business.
iPad leisure, this device, road warrior.
Got it. All right. Let me paint a picture for you. A woman brings her laptop to a coffee shop on 47th Street in Manhattan. It's January. The snow is coming down. She looks nervously out the window. A government official from Russia drives by in a minivan. Without anyone's knowledge, a Wi-Fi connection is made, and the papers are passed without the two ever seeing each other.
Ooh.
That's exactly what happened, according to court papers. A clandestine network of Russian spies has been in the United States, and they set up their own private Wi-Fi networks and flash memory sticks and text messages to trade all of their secrets to each other. They never even looked at each other. In another exchange described in the court papers, this woman, Anna Chapman, allegedly opens her laptop while in a bookstore in Lower Manhattan, uses a private Wi-Fi network to communicate with a Russian officials nearby. They never talk to each other, but they swap information.
The dead drop is officially dead.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Wi-Fi drop now. I mean, this where's Hollywood been on this stuff?
Well, the other thing they were talking a lot about in this article was how they were using steganography, the embedding of text and images and posting it on the internet.
Yes.
We knew it.
Ken from Chicago in the chat room is like, you mean they sent each other email? It's pretty interesting stuff, though, how you always think of the gloved hands and the briefcases being, you don't need to do that anymore. You just, the reason you don't send it over email in all seriousness is you don't want it tracked. I mean, the fact that you're sending it over the open internet means that it's liable to be found by someone. So if you set up your own private encrypted Wi-Fi network, you reduce the chance. It doesn't make it impossible, but you reduce the chance that someone would discover the data you're transferring. And the steganography stuff, that's always good. That's always good TV.
It is. I just like the word. It sounds like a dinosaur. It's a steganographer.
Which is basically just hiding data within other data.
Right.
You got to go check out Declan McCullough's story over at CNET. It's got all the juicy details. And apparently Anna Chapman appeared in federal court in Manhattan on Monday evening. And a prosecutor claimed she used a range extender for her laptop that communicated to an address that matched a Russian government computer, and a judge has now denied bail. So looking bad for Ms. Chapman. They are not being accused of anything malicious. We should make that clear. They're not being accused of any actual confidential information being traded, but what they are being accused of is not notifying the United States government that they were agents of the Russian government operating because they were clandestine. So it wasn't like they were stealing plans from the Pentagon. They were just talking about generally what's going on in the United States, but you're supposed to let your allies know that you're doing that.
Well, that's no fun.
Well, yeah. Plus, how do you get that whole Cold War era storyline going on if you let them know you're there? All right, Becky, I've got a little financial trouble. I didn't really want to bring this up on the show, but it has been bugging me. I need to raise $150,000 quick. You got any ideas?
I do, Tom.
Really?
Number one,
okay.
You can sell... No, just kidding. You'll be selling meat door-to-door.
I only have one kidney left, so that's right. Not an option.
Our friend Elon Musk of Tesla, who was declared in some bankruptcy filings that he was dead broke, is no longer dead broke. Tesla did an IPO yesterday. They raised $226 million. They sold, 13.3 million shares for $17 each. Demand was strong. So Elon sold a million of the shares. So he's up a cool 17 mil. He's got some taxes. He's got some divorce issues to work out in terms of the settlement. And he has another 28 million shares of Tesla now valued at $504 million.
I don't really have time to build an electric car company, although that is a good idea. All I have is a kid who's just been to the dentist.
Well, then you are in luck, my friend.
I could still make money off this?
Your segues are genius today. David Does Dentist, the infamous YouTube hit, which is done about 62 million views on YouTube. Well, the DeVore's family of Florida has made $150,000 off of that video. And it's about $100,000 in advertising from YouTube. So that's actually an interesting little metric to figure out how much YouTube advertising is worth. 62 million.
Well, I know with them, at a certain point, YouTube came and said, hey, do you want to monetize this? So the first million or so streams may not have had the advertisements shared with them yet, because as it caught on, they started to realize, oh, wait a minute, we need to get into this. How do you get into the opt into the revenue and the making the money thing?
So they did make $100,000 though eventually when YouTube came to them, and I can't remember what the number was when they did start monetizing it. I want to say it was 6 or 8 million views. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I don't know that for sure. Now they also made $50,000 from a Super Bowl ad for Vizio.
So licensing, yeah.
Well, and then they appeared with like the Numa Numa kid for the Super Bowl ads.
That because the Vizio thing just had clips from all over the internet on it. So that I forgot that David was one of those clips.
Yes. And then they're also working on licensing deals. And this one's a little creepy with a company that makes scrubs for dentists. Would you want to see David does dentists on your dentist chest as he's like leaning in for the big extraction? I don't think so.
Probably not. No. I mean, it's a funny video, but that's I don't associate it with responsible dentistry.
No. One nice thing. They gave a
even though it totally is. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. They did give a chunk of cash to charities, including Operation Smile, which is the one that helps kids in third world countries with cleft palate and stuff like that surgery. So that's cool. It's a good story.
For them. All right. On to the calendar. We got a bunch of stuff going on today, including several updates, right? New firmware and stuff.
That's right. Nexus One gets Android 2.2. So starting today, Nexus One users will receive Froyo in over-the-air software updates on their phone. Just download it, wait for it to install, and you should be good to go. PS3 firmware upgrade. For the PlayStation 3, now live, it's bringing updated Facebook integration, video editing, photo sharing, power-saving improvements. Anything else you've heard on this, Tom?
On the PlayStation thing?
Yeah.
Just, I don't know why I'd pay for it. Because you already get the PlayStation Live for free, and I haven't seen anything compelling in the listing that says, oh, this is worth it. Although it's not that much money. I'll grant you that. And maybe there'll be a game demo that comes along that I'll be sucked into wanting to buy it. But it's not like Xbox Live where you can't play certain games if you don't, at least not yet. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe there is a game out there I want to play that I have to buy this for. But I'd hold off. I wouldn't be running in to buy PlayStation Plus quite yet.
Now, for those of us who play the Wii Rule, also a big update over the weekend. And good news, Magic Cauliflower, still there.
Leo is so happy about that. And me too.
Woo. Woo. And then one other little update kind of for the Tech TV faithful. Erica Hill filling in for Katie Couric tonight. She was there last night. She'll be there tonight again. And I just am excited for her. That's cool.
I am so excited. Erica was the voice of ZDTV Radio when I started at ZDTV in 1999. And I remember when she first did ZDTV News on ZDTV. And we're all like, wow, Erica's really, really good. She should do that some more often. And then she went after Tech TV. She went off to CNN. And then she was Anderson Cooper's news co-host. And then and now she's on CBS Morning News. And then a chance to host CBS Evening News. I will be watching.
Very psyched for her.
I'm very excited for Erica. Good job, Erica Hill. I know you may not know her from Tech TV. So pardon our pride in our coworker there, because that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and she's nice too.
Yes. I
mean, who gets to be that good-looking, talented, and nice? I'm so annoyed.
Yeah, I know. Did we mention that the AT&T stores started finally selling the iPhone 4 today?
Oh, thank you so much. The iPhone 4 available at AT&T stores this morning, and I contacted AT&T, and they said, we're mostly sold out, but they are taking orders on fulfillment for delivery later on.
I got mine.
Oh, you did?
I did. See, that's what I was doing instead of setting up the video and other media for this show. See, that's what a professional does. He abandons his post to go buy a new toy.
To go buy a new toy.
So, little interesting tidbit. So, people who go to the AT&T store to buy it have to activate in-store. I was like, I've got to get back to work by 2 o'clock. Can I just grab the phone and go home and activate it later like folks do who order the phone by mail? And they said, no, we won't sell it to you unless you activate it in store.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, the lines were very long because they sat and waited with every single person to try to talk them through and get their pick their new plans and all that stuff. And while I was waiting in line, I went at about, I guess it was like 12:30. I was in there buying it by 1:30, sold out of the 32 gigabyte. I was one of the last people to have it in line. They sold out.
Only 45 minutes though, right?
That's not
too bad.
Now this is Petaluma though, and they said that in the morning it was wrapped around the side of the building. But
wow,
yeah,
that's crazy.
Oh, and they said if you missed it, you can call them, and they think they can get it to you by mail in only 7 days, whereas right now Apple is saying 3 weeks even just to ship.
Good tip. All right, so if you're not one of the 1.7 million people who got one over last weekend or since, there's still hope for you to get this very important thing. You can't buy an Evo either, though. They're backordered as well.
Yeah. Now, do you think that's just massive demand, or?
Well, I think in both cases, they underestimated how many people would want their phone. It's still less people. They're selling less Evos than iPhone 4s, but they're more popular than they expected. And smartphones where it's at, man. If you're a young person going out on your own for the first time after college, build a smartphone. That's my advice to you.
Did I tell you they used the hotspot within the Evo the other day, and it was awesome. I was so impressed.
Was it with the 4G or just the regular 3G?
Just 3G. Yeah. And it was. I just found it to be faster than my iPad by a mile. So I'm using my regular computer. I'm going off of the 3G version of the Evo Wi-Fi hotspot that it creates. And it was faster than my 3G iPad pulling down content.
All right. There you go. I have used Sprint 3G in other cases and always found it pretty reliable in this area. But like all this stuff, it depends on where you are. Let's move to the voicemails. 260-TNT-SHOW. First caller has a little instructional information for estimating cell phone strength that he found out from Security Now, Steve Gibson. Take a listen.
Hey, guys. It's Elliot from Florida. Just wanted to comment on two quick things from yesterday's show. First, the signal strength with the iPhone antenna. One thing that you guys didn't note, interesting, that Steve Gibson researched and found out a little bit, he's got on his blog, is that the signal meters on the phone only indicate your signal strength once you get below 5% signal. So from 6% to 100, it will show you 5 full bars, which is why some people aren't seeing this issue with stronger signal strengths closer to the tower. That might be why some people are seeing it and some people aren't.
So that's a really good point. You have to have really bad reception already for that bar to start dropping at all. And so if you're really close to the tower and you hold it in your left hand, you may be reducing the signal, but the bars wouldn't go down because you have such a good, strong signal to begin with.
When we were planning to do the story for GMA last week, we were going to shoot Walnut Creek, and I thought, oh, we'll have to leave because we'll probably be in an area that has such high signal quality that we won't be able to demo this. But it worked consistently, and it didn't feel like I was in the bottom 5%. I mean, I felt like I had good coverage. So I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, an interesting little bit of math there. Our next caller is from North Carolina, and we talked about Windows 8. One of the rumors for Windows 8 is that Microsoft would be adding an app store and how ridiculous that is. Well, Mark shows us why it might not be quite as ridiculous as we thought.
AT&T crew, this is Nick from North Carolina. Just calling comment on Tom's aversion to app stores on normal computers. I think that that Steam is a good example of an app store working on normal computers just for games. So they could possibly expand that to other areas. Thanks a lot. Love the show. Bye.
I think his name is Nick, not Mark. I went with the Google Voice transcription, and it failed me. But good point, Nick. Steam on Windows or Mac or Linux is sort of an app store. You can go and you can buy software, games, and install them on your machine. And you can even download them from individual places. But Steam makes it really easy to collect them and manage them and get the latest games. So I thought that was an interesting point. And we had a few other people write in with some interesting points.
Yeah, and also I just wanted to make one comment on that. Download.com is an app store.
Well, that was my point yesterday, is the internet is an app store. You know, there's two cows and download.com. And you know, I mean, why do you need to put an app store in here? But I like this email that we got to TNT at twit.tv.
I'll get to this one. Tom and Assorted Posse. I feel like I'm on the, what was that show?
Gunsmoke.
Yes, my posse. I think it's kind of funny that Microsoft is considering putting an app store in Windows 8. That would be weird. A central repository of apps that are spyware free. I can't think of any other desktop platform that offers something similar. Oh, wait. Hasn't this been available for Linux distros for 10 years? In fact, I think the more refined Ubuntu app store is a year old. Nice job, Microsoft. At least we'll be able to pay for some apps instead of downloading them for free. Who said innovation is dead at Microsoft, lovely Cleveland?
We got a good handful of emails like this pointing out that Linux repositories have been around forever, and they're essentially app stores for anyone who runs Linux. Point being, they're free, though. And the, what is that? service that does the tracking. When they're now owned by CNET, so if you download something from
version tracker.com,
Version Tracker will alert you when there are new versions. So there are some benefits to having some kind of centralized repository.
But I think this misses a huge point, because I mean, I get it. There's an open venue, the web. You have these, you know, all of these different distribution sources. But isn't Steve Jobs' whole point about the App Store is that it's a gated community with somebody doing security?
For the iPhone, it is, but right. Not necessarily for the operating system. So, and Eric was pointing out there is sort of a similar App Store thing in OS X.
Yeah, for years, if you just went to the Apple menu, one of the items that you see up here is Mac OS X software, and it takes you to this page that Apple's been running for years now, and it's all but a store, but an App Store, because it does everything but sell the apps, but it curates them, it promotes them, it categorizes apps for your Mac.
So
I think you're right. This is a precedent, right? That is just being solidified by Apple, and now everybody's copying it. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I think we don't know how Microsoft's really going to do this, because this is just a leaked slideshow. And my initial dismissal of it assumed that it was going to be mimicking the Apple iPhone store type of behavior. And that's probably where Microsoft is riffing off of. But there are ways to do it which would make sense and would be actually useful. And so maybe we shouldn't rush to judgment.
And maybe by calling it an App Store, Apple having already set the precedent, Microsoft won't get into hot water for the decisions that they make about who to keep in and who to kick out.
Yeah. We also speculated yesterday about the idea of putting solar panels on top of our cars to help charge electric cars. And we got a handful of emails from lots of people. Thanks to everybody who wrote in. We're not going to be able to read all of them. But a couple of examples. Chris wrote in and said that while watching the show, we were talking about the solar charger. After driving our Remember the Fallen Hummer for a year, we made the move to a Prius, and what a godsend. After getting the Prius, we got really hooked on greed and started looking into furthering our miles per gallon, and the company SolarElectricalVehicles.com has amazing tech where that we are thinking of adding to our current vehicle. It's roof panels that really work. So you actually charge the battery, both the car battery that runs your electrical system like your air conditioning and the big drivetrain battery from the solar panels on top. Ankh wrote in and pointed out a story at SiliconRepublic.com about Fiat collaborating with a company called Iris to put solar panels on top of their cars. A few people pointed out that the Nissan Leaf is supposed to have solar panels on top. So this is definitely going on in a lot of different places.
I just checked the Nissan page because I remember this solar panel thing being a big deal of it. They're going to be built into the spoiler of the, looks like on the back, right over the hatchback. And it's actually going to be used to power like your essentials. It says you convert sunlight into power to charge essentials without draining the battery. What do you think essentials mean?
My guess from that reading is your air conditioning and you know, your essential electrical items, the sparks that start your car up, you know, not your radio, maybe, coolant system. I don't know.
It seems like this seems gimmicky to me, quite honestly, because I think the better option will be when solar is on more rooftops and then it's just a natural thing to plug in your car. And there was a study that just came out today saying that by 2013, the cost of silicon is going to go down enough that we're going to see a lot more deployment of solar panels for photovoltaic use in homes. And, you know, as you look at all the pieces of the alternative energy puzzle, solar is starting to look more and more like the answer. It's not going to be the answer. We have to get the battery technology up, but it's definitely becoming more and more a part of the solution.
All right, folks, if you want to make fun of me for saying sparks start an electric car or any other feedback on the show, send it to tnt@twit.tv, or you can give us a call on our phone number, 260-TNT-SHOW. Becky, you're going off on vacation. You only had you one time this week. This sucks.
Summertime. You can always follow me, Whirly, on Twitter, but I will miss you.
I will miss you, too. But we'll see you again on Tuesday, twit.tv/TNT, to find out everything else about this show. And I will see you tomorrow. Ta-da!